It is 2:31 p.m. and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is being held virtually via Zoom, and the public has been properly notified of the options to attend and observe the meeting. Ms. Folks, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Medina?
Present.
Dr. Flint?
Present.
Dr. Davey is recused. Dr. Livesay?
Present.
Dr. Seidman?
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Folks. So the item on the agenda is discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to Nicole Huggins' petition for rehearing filed in case numbers 24F-2411-PSY and 24F-2415-PSY, including all supplemental filings. So before we begin, please keep in mind that the board may go into executive session for legal advice or to review confidential records. So the confidential records would be reviewed according to ARS Section 38-431.03, subsection A2, and the legal advice would be according to ARS Section 38-431.03, subsection A3. So at this time, I'll ask the parties to identify themselves for the record. So we'll start with the counsel for the state of Arizona, and then we'll go to Dr. Huggins and her counsel.
Good afternoon, members of the board. Jean Galvin, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the state.
Good afternoon. You have Andy Turk, Paige Kemper on behalf of Dr. Huggins, who is also in the room.
Thank you. So we have Assistant Attorney General Carrie Smith, who is serving as the independent legal advisor for the board today. So board members are, attorney for the board is Ms. Smith.
Good afternoon.
And thank you all for being here. So according to Arizona Administrative Code, section R4-26-308, subsection C, the board may grant rehearing or review of a board order or decision for the following causes that materially affect the moving party's rights. The first is an irregularity in the administrative proceedings of the agency, its hearing officer, or the prevailing party, or any order or abuse of discretion that caused the moving party to be deprived of a fair hearing. The second reason would be the misconduct of the board, its hearing officer, or the prevailing party. Third, an accident or surprise that could not be prevented by ordinary prudence. Fourth, newly discovered material evidence that could not, with reasonable diligence, be discovered and produced at the original hearing. Fifth, excessive or insufficient penalties. Sixth, an error in the admission or rejection of evidence or other errors of law occurring at the administrative hearing or during the progress of the case. Seventh, the order or decision is not justified by the evidence or is contrary to law. Now, the board has reviewed the request for rehearing and the request and the response to the request. So each party is going to have 5 minutes to address the board on this matter. And this is the time for legal argument related to the grounds for rehearing or review. And the party should not use this time to present new evidence or testimony to the board regarding the merits of the case. So we'll proceed with oral argument as follows. The moving party will present first, followed by the state. After the state's presentation, the moving party will be given the opportunity for a brief rebuttal. The moving party has submitted a first notice of supplement to the record on review. The state has submitted an objection to the respondent's first notice of supplement to the record on review. And the respondent has then submitted a response to the state's objection. The board's consideration shall include whether to accept or disregard the supplemental information that is submitted. The board has heard, so let's actually hear from Ms. Galvin, as I stated, and then we'll go to Mr. Turk or Ms. Kemper.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, the moving party should go first. So counsel for Dr. Huggins.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Turk or Ms. Kemper, the floor is yours.
I'm sorry, I'd like to clarify. Are you hearing our notice of supplement and the state's objection first prior to our motion for rehearing? I want to make sure I touch accordingly.
Yes, so we'll touch both the supplement and the underlying merits. So you may present on both at the same time.
Okay. Thank you. As you all know, the record is flush with evidence in this case, and we have provided hundreds of pages of documents in support of our motion for rehearing and our notice to supplement the record. I don't anticipate going through each document in very much detail, but I do think it is important to highlight some of the more substantial facts that are at play here. Before I get started, are there any specific questions that I ought to address directly that the board has?
Well, so I would assume you want to address the two documents that you want to supplement the record with. So begin with that and then address the merits of why the board should review or rehear this case.
Sure. We submitted a first notice to supplement the record for review as upon receipt of two relevant documents that are pertinent to the board's consideration of our motion for rehearing. The first document that was provided was the ALJ's decision in the DES case underlying a similar factual claims alleged by Bierman against Dr. Huggins. And this particular document is pertinent to the motion for rehearing because it offers some additional factual basis and opinions from the administrative law judge that directly go to the merits of what the board itself is considering today. While we don't contend that the ALJ's conclusions are required to be followed by the board, we do think it's highly persuasive and ought to be considered as the ALJ in the DES claim considered the evidence on their merits. And the second document that was supplied was a mental health evaluation that Dr. Huggins underwent before a Dr. Dawson. And as you all know, the board filed an order requiring Dr. Huggins to undergo a fitness for duty evaluation, which she did not receive and did not undergo within the time allotted by the order. Insofar as the board has any concerns regarding Dr. Huggins's mental health or ability to competently practice as a psychologist in the state of Arizona, the mental health evaluation is pertinent and relevant to the board's consideration of the motion for rehearing. These two documents were supplemented and provided to the board in an effort to ensure that the board had all relevant factual information before it, so upon its consideration of the motion for rehearing. As is discussed in the pleadings under regarding the motion for rehearing, there has been some lack of document sharing between the parties or alleged failure to provide evidence relevant to the underlying complaints against Dr. Huggins, and we felt it was pertinent that the board be supplemented with all relevant documentation as it has previously requested throughout this proceeding in order to fully consider the motion for rehearing. We do not think that the supplement of these records is prejudicial to the board or the state at all. In fact, it only gives further insight into the merits of the allegations, which can only be beneficial to all parties involved. And we do think that they are appropriately considered by the board, and we do think that they are very persuasive to the board's consideration.
And do you want to speak to why the board should rehear or review this case?
Yes, I would transition now to the motion for rehearing. Our motion for rehearing is based on Rule R4-26-308, subsection C, subsections 1, 2, 6, and 7. This particularly is regarding the irregularity of the administrative proceedings, misconduct of the board, its hearing officer, or prevailing party, an error in the admission or rejection of evidence, or other errors of law occurring at the administrative hearing or during the process of the case, and the order or decision is not justified by the evidence or is contrary to law. To the extent that the board does allow additional documents that were supplemented prior to this hearing, our motion for rehearing would also be based on subsection 4, newly discovered material evidence. There are several areas of fact which support our motion for rehearing and establish subsections 1, 2, 4, 6, and 7 of the rules authorizing the board to grant a rehearing. First, there's a lack of adequate notice afforded to Dr. Huggins. As is explained in the motion for rehearing, Dr. Huggins received the board complaint, but then was out of the country and struggled to receive any subsequent mailings that were mailed to her home. In addition, she has had persistent problems with her email addresses, as was relayed to the board on multiple occasions. In fact, the board's own USPS tracking record indicated that at least one pertinent document mailed to Dr. Huggins was unclaimed and returned to the sender. Essentially, the board's finding that Dr. Huggins was, quote, properly noticed as an integral fact relied upon to grant the final order and to issue the final order is reversible error warranting a rehearing. There are two complaints that are underlying this proceeding. First, I would like to discuss the Bierman complaint. The Bierman complaint rested entirely upon an administrative misunderstanding that should have been resolved or even dismissed on its outset. Dr. Huggins properly submitted a response to the Bierman complaint where she explained the situation regarding all allegations alleged in the Bierman complaint, specifically, Dr. Huggins faced an unanticipated family emergency that required her immediate attention. She promptly notified Bierman, the client, and the client's family of the situation. She diligently cooperated to finalize the underlying diagnostic evaluation, despite being unable to access necessary documentation on the Bierman's network. She substantiated all of these factual assertions with documentation, correspondence, and evidence directly to the board. This same evidence was submitted before Administrative Law Judge Rollins with the Arizona Department of Economic Security. After his consideration of the same evidence that was presented to the board, he found that Dr. Huggins was discharged for reasons other than willful or negligent misconduct, and that Bierman's allegations were inconsistent and not fully supported by the documents admitted into evidence. Despite the substantial evidence that was presented in support of Dr. Huggins' response to the Bierman complaint, the Bierman complaint was permitted by the board to proceed and eventually led to the final order, when it should have been dismissed outright as a mere frivolous allegations unsubstantiated by any evidence submitted by Bierman. Second, a complaint filed by J.M., which utterly lacked any credibility and similar to the Bierman complaint, should not have been presented to the board in any substantial matter and should have been dismissed at the outright due to its lack of credibility and clear indication of a personal vendetta. The evidence presented in the motion for hearing illustrates a prolonged conflict between Dr. Huggins and JM, spanning over several decades across several courts and administrative agencies. The board was made aware of the conflict between the parties and the ongoing disputes between the parties, and the board acknowledged that it was caught in the middle of the two doctors. Despite the clear personal bias and animosity towards one another, and specifically the animosity and personal vendetta that is the foundation of the JM complaint, the board allowed the JM complaint to continue through the proceeding, which eventually led to the final order. The allegations against Dr. Huggins in the JM complaint are entirely unsubstantiated and founded on JM's personal distraught with Dr. Huggins and should have been dismissed outright, creating additional error to the underlying proceedings. The ALJ was not informed of any of the information relating to the hostile relationship between Dr. Huggins and JM, information that was directly relevant to the consideration and the weight of the allegations asserted in the JM complaint. Frankly, the ALJ ought to have been informed of the entirety of the facts underlying this proceeding in order to make a conclusion leading to the final order. The board also found that Dr. Huggins failed to participate in the underlying proceeding. However, as the record shows, and as is substantiated by the evidence supporting the motion for rehearing, Dr. Huggins participated in the underlying proceedings to the extent that she was aware of such filings entered by the board. She submitted detailed and exhaustive responses to both the Bierman complaint and the JM complaint, including extensive exhibits and documents attached thereto. Moreover, she continued to inform the board of ongoing issues with her email address and interactions with JM. Finally, the mental health evaluation that was submitted with our notice of supplement on the record, Dr. Huggins participated in a mental health evaluation which found that there were no concerns with regard to her mental status or mental health. Dr. Dawson noted Dr. Huggins' continued motivation to strive for professional integrity. Insofar as the board has any concerns regarding the current state of Dr. Huggins' ability to competently practice, such concerns are alleviated. In its response to the motion for rehearing, the state contends that the, quote, the board never reached the merits of either complaint and that the substance of those complaints had not been adjudicated. Our motion for rehearing simply asks to allow Dr. Huggins the opportunity to present the evidence regarding the merits of the complaints and to be heard fully. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kemper. Ms. Galvin?
Thank you, members of the board. Jean Galvin on behalf of the state. I will first address the respondent's first notice to supplement the record on review, and I would direct the board to the state's objection. First of all, the respondent provided no authority that would allow them to file and supplement the record at this point, at this juncture in the proceeding. The request for rehearing relates to what occurred at and around the time of the hearing. It is not a point at which in the proceedings you are allowed or permitted to supplement the record. The request for rehearing needs to stand on its own and what has already occurred, and this is not the time to supplement the record with additional evidence. There is a rule of civil procedure, Rule 59, relating to a request for a new trial. The statutes in Arizona require that an agency, in drafting their rules relating to a request for rehearing or review, are to align those rules as closely as possible with Rule 59. And under Rule 59, newly discovered evidence must have been in existence at the time of trial. What they are seeking to supplement is the DES decision and this mental health evaluation, both of which are clearly not and were not in existence at the time of this formal administrative hearing. Therefore, they should not be permitted to enter into evidence those two documents. In fact, Ms. Kemper stated that to the extent that this would be allowed, this submission, they would argue that it should be allowed under the rules for newly established evidence that they did not cite in their original request for rehearing, because that DES decision did not exist and the mental health evaluation did not exist. In our objection, we clearly pointed to the DHS rules that stated that the ALJ decision and a DES decision is limited solely to the unemployment realm and does not have carry any weight into other administrative decisions. Clearly, the ALJ and the unemployment benefits did not have any other information about the practice of psychology, what the board ordered. What we have here today with respect to this supplement, I would just ask that you exercise your discretion, deny their request to supplement the record, because the ALJ decision in DES is not relevant. And this mental health evaluation, Dr. Huggins requested this evaluation on her own. It was not board ordered. She had to do it as part of her criminal case, where she was accused and charged and found guilty of violating orders of protection. And this evaluation was not conducted by a board approved psychologist. There was no psychological testing involved, and the provider did not opine on Dr. Huggins' ability to safely practice psychology. And again, both of those pieces of evidence did not exist at the time of the formal hearing and should not be allowed to supplement the record at this time. With respect to her motion for rehearing, this is I need to bring you back, because this is not about the Berman complaint and whether this was just an administrative issue that could have been dealt with, you know, quickly and swiftly. And this is not about JM's complaint and whether there is animosity between the two and whether this has gone on for, you know, a decade or whether there was abuse in the marriage. What this is about is Dr. Huggins' failure to comply with a board order and her failure to get that evaluation, her failure to comply with a subpoena, and her failure to submit requested documentation. It is not about, they're attacking the Berman complaint and whether it should have, you know, how it should have been adjudicated. They're attacking JM and whether this was just, you know, revenge and more animosity between the two. But that's not the issue here. The issue is she failed to abide by that order to get the evaluation, failed to comply with the subpoena, and she, So she failed to comply with the subpoena, failed to comply with the board order. And that is what is at issue. I will direct you to our response to the motion for rehearing, because there's a lot of time spent on the fact that she didn't get notice. And the state very carefully rebutted their assertions that there was not notice. You will see from the response that the board communicated with her with the same email addresses that she was communicating with the board. We inadvertently learned of another email address. We communicated with her through that email address successfully. She never changed her home address, the address of record. No mail that was sent by regular mail was returned. And the certified mail that was sent was often went unclaimed and was returned to sender because she wasn't picking up her certified mail. She cannot, with any credibility, assert that she did not receive various notices, whether it's of the committee meeting, whether it was a board meeting, or the complaint of notice and hearing. And if you look at our response, there are instances where, for instance, shortly after the CSC meeting, where this was, where these complaints were discussed, shortly thereafter, within a few hours, contacts staff and says, you know, I really wish the CSC would have called, you know, JM's partner or something like that. So she knew there was a meeting. She knew what happened at the CSC meeting, but yet they're trying to tell us, well, she didn't get notice of that meeting. The same can be said shortly after the board meeting. It was within a very short period of time after the board meeting where the final decision was rendered that we get a notice of representation that Mr. Turk has now been retained. Well, if she's not getting notices of these things, why is she, you know, having an attorney and getting and retaining an attorney, opining on what should have happened at the CSC? Her argument simply that she did not get notice is not credible, and the state rebutted very carefully those allegations that she did not get notice, and we showed that in fact she did get notice. Finding that there is another issue that was raised in their request for rehearing but not addressed today, they suggested that participation by one of the board members would justify a rehearing. And these very attenuating assertions that one board member who happened to be in the same class back in during their PsyD program some 20 some years ago would justify and require this board member to recuse themselves. Again, there was no evidence shown, but mainly and primarily just bold accusations that there must be some bias because they attended the same school, they were in the same cohort, they may have worked at a university at the same time, and therefore that board member would have to have known about the turmoil with Dr. Huggins and her husband, and therefore that should disqualify her. There's case law that says you can't make these bold assertions that a board member is has bias or prejudice. You have to submit proof of that bias or prejudice in order for that disqualification to come to fruition and be required. And they simply did not do that. The state respectfully requests that you grant or that you deny their request for rehearing and that you deny their notice to supplement the record for the reasons stated today and in our responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Ms. Kemper, a brief rebuttal as to the points that Ms. Galvin brought up.
Yes, thank you. Regarding specifically our notice to supplement the record, simply put, due process demands that that Dr. Huggins be allowed to present all the relevant evidence regarding the allegations and complaint against her. There is an utter lack of any prejudice that could potentially be had by the state or the board in response to the submittal of the additional evidence. In fact, it is the state's assertion that the final order and this entire proceeding is based upon Dr. Huggins's quote, failure to participate. The fact that we are now getting objections regarding submitting additional relevant evidence is simply contrary to what we understood the board to have wanted in this proceeding. Additionally, Ms. Galvin contends that it is inappropriate to submit any additional records or evidence in support of our motion for rehearing following the initial briefing. However, the rules provide a motion for rehearing or review may be amended at any time before it's ruled upon by the board. This just emphasizes and illustrates the board's encouragement that additional documents be filed and submitted for the board's consideration prior to the hearing we are at now. As the board knows, we supplemented the record with considerable time for the board's review and the state's review. And there is an entirely lack of prejudicial risk to any parties involved. Regarding specifically the mental health evaluation, Ms. Galvin points out that it is conducted by a doctor that was not suggested by the board specifically. However, that determination certainly goes to the weight of the contents of the mental health evaluation that the board ought to consider. And to that point should be considered by the board. And if the board wishes to give it that amount of weight, depending on Dr. Dawson's credentials, then it ought to be given the opportunity to do that. And regarding Ms. Galvin's assertion that these proceedings should not consider the merits of the JM complaint and the Bierman complaint, and that this proceeding is based upon, quote, a failure to participate. If that's the case, then our motion for rehearing ought to be granted outright, because if it is a failure to participate that brought us to this point, we are certainly participating now. And our motion for rehearing simply requests that the board offer Dr. Huggins the opportunity to present her evidence, present the facts to an administrative law judge who can consider the weight of the complaints as they should have been given and adjudicate them on their merits. The contention that Dr. Huggins ought not be allowed to receive an adjudication of the complaints on their merits, now that we are here, is outlandish and completely outside what the legal establishment of our country was based upon. It's foundational and elementary that every defendant upon which an allegation is launched upon ought to be given the opportunity to respond and ought to be given the opportunity to defend herself against frivolous and unsubstantiated allegations. We simply ask that the complaints be heard on their merits and that we be given an opportunity to present evidence as directed.
Thank you, Ms. Kemper. So at this time, the board has heard arguments from the parties and reviewed the pleadings that are filed in this matter. So I think we should first consider the request to supplement the record, and we can discuss and propose a motion. But before we do that, I just wanted to get the temperature of the board members to see if we should go into executive session for legal advice just on that. Dr. Stewart.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Second by Dr. Medina. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? None opposed. The motion carries. And we are back in open session. Board members, any discussion or motion with respect to supplementing the record with the two documents? So in terms of discussion, I'll say that the two documents, I mean, the only way that they can come in is under R-426-308C subsection 4, which is newly discovered material evidence that could not with reasonable diligence be discovered and produced at the original hearing. And in my view, the word discovered implies that that document existed at the time the decision that the applicant is asking us to review was made. The decision was made in July of 2024. The DES decision of the ALJ was issued in September of 24. It did not exist in July of 24. and the psych evaluation was produced in April of 25, again, did not exist at the time of the July 24 decision. So in my view, this is not newly discovered evidence. The second part of this is, even assuming that this was newly discovered evidence, is that evidence material? And again, in my view, I do not consider this to be material to the issue at hand. The underlying decision relates to non-compliance with board orders, and there is nothing in the DES decision that would move the needle, so to speak, on that particular issue. And the issue for us is unprofessional conduct relating to non-compliance with board orders. And the DES decision has nothing to say about that. Same with the evaluation. The board had ordered a specific fitness for duty evaluation, which was never done as ordered by the board. So any after the fact evaluation that kind of looks like fitness for duty evaluation simply does not suffice, again, in my view, and is not material evidence, even if that was newly discovered. So having, at least in my mind, having failed the only applicable subsection, which is C4, I do not think these two documents can be added to the record as a supplement. Board members, discussion, thoughts, or motion. Dr. Livesey.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar. I just want to state for the record that I have crossed paths professionally with Dr. Huggins over the years. I'm confident that I can adjudicate this matter with an open mind. And I also want to acknowledge that I have reviewed the underlying case materials prior to participating today, even though I was not part of the board process that's being heard today. I have reviewed all the case materials. That's all.
Thank you. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to agree with our chair, especially when it comes to the materiality of the psychological examination that Dr. Huggins has undertaken. This is not a fit for duty evaluation as ordered by the board. So I don't see how someone could see that any different than that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Dr. Flint.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to convey that I agree with your assessment. And just for the record, I wanted to just briefly discuss the fact that I have familiarity with Dr. Huggins. However, this individual, or this is insufficient in all means to warrant any sort of recusal. And the accusation of misconduct that was recorded by Ms. Galvin a bit earlier is unwarranted at best. And I wanted to put on the record that I have absolutely no personal relationship, nor do I have a substantial professional relationship more than a few emails and a contact through the university system. I just would like that on the record, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Flint. Appreciate that. Okay, any further discussion on the supplementing the record? Then I'll make a motion to deny the request to supplement the record with the two aforementioned documents.
Second.
Second by Dr. Stewart. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? None opposed, the motion carries. So then the next issue for the board to consider is whether to grant or deny rehearing or review. And on that, I have some discussion items, but I just wanted to see take the board's temperature on whether we should go into executive session for legal advice as to that part.
I move that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Second by Dr. Flint. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? None opposed, the motion carries. Okay, the time is 3:34 p.m. and we are back in open session. The question is whether to grant or deny the petition for rehearing or review. Board members, I have a few discussion items, and then I'll open the floor for board members to offer comments or discussion items. So I think in my mind, based on the things in the record and the oral submissions today that we received from both parties, the issue comes down to the adequacy of notice. And in my view, there was adequate notice given to Dr. Huggins regarding all substantial developments in the case. There was an initial order for a fitness for duty evaluation to be completed on or before May 15, 2024. We did not hear anything from Dr. Huggins. On June 17, 2024, we issued a complaint and a notice of hearing. And we have, the record is sufficiently and adequately shows that that notice was issued in accordance with established practices and established law. So there was no error in the sending of the notice as far as we can glean from the record. As to what happens on Dr. Huggins' end, that is anybody's guess. We don't engage in that kind of guesswork. But from the board's perspective, the rule is if the notice is put in the mails, that is giving notice to the intended recipient of the notice. The fitness for duty evaluation was never completed. Instead, there was this proffered evaluation that was submitted that was completed in April of 2025. So as far as the issue that led to the revocation of the license, which is the failure to comply with a board order to complete the fitness for duty evaluation, the facts are plain and simple. That was never completed. That is still not completed. So there is no legal basis to grant rehearing or review. Also, there was some discussion in the oral argument today about subsection C1, 2, 6, and 7. And for the record, again, there's nothing in the evidence to suggest any reason to grant rehearing or review based on those subsections. So again, that all is in my view. Board members, any other thoughts? Dr. Seidemann.
Thank you, Chairman Diner. I would agree with our chairman. My thoughts are to deny the motion for a rehearing or review. There's really no evidence that there were errors made that affected Dr. Huggins' rights as a licensee. So that's my concise thought there. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Stewart?
Thank you, Chairman. I have to agree with my colleague, Dr. Seidemann, that I'm just not compelled, I'm not persuaded by the information presented by Dr. Huggins and her legal teams that there were any errors made. And so I also would be against rehearing or even reviewing the case.
Any other discussion or motion? Dr. Medina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make a motion, if I may, to deny the request for rehearing, for review, as there was adequate notice and there is not an identifiable reason to grant a rehearing at this time.
Second.
Second by Dr. Stewart. Any further discussion? Let's do a roll call, Ms. Folks.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Dr. I'm sorry, Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Flint?
Yes.
Dr. Livesay?
Yes.
Dr. Seidman?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
You have a... The vote is unanimous for a denial of the request for rehearing.
Thank you, Ms. Folks. So that concludes the matter on today's agenda. The board's decision will be reduced into a written order and served on the parties, and the parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order as well. Thank you, everybody, for attending. Appreciate everybody and all the hard work that went into this.
Thank
we
you.
Are adjourned
Thank you.
At 3:41 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.